The Cherry Seed by Yuri Ilyasha. On Sunday, I was visiting Natasha at her dacha. There were three other guests, two girls and Boris Mikhailovich. The girls, along with Natasha's brother, Erast, set off to the river for a boat ride. We, that is to say Natasha, Boris Mikhailovich and I, went into the forest. In the forest, we laid down in a glade, which was brightly lit by the sun. Natasha raised up her face, and suddenly her face seemed like a shining porcelain dish. Natasha treats me like an equal, but Boris Mikhailovich she treats like an elder. She fawns on him. She understands that I don't like it, that I envy Boris Mikhailovich, and so she often takes me by the hand. And, no matter what she says, turns to me to ask, "Right, Fedya?" As if to ask my forgiveness, not directly, but by some sideways route. We started to talk about birds, because from the thicket we heard the funny voice of a bird. I said that I'd never seen, for example, a thrush, and asked, "What is it like, a thrush?" A bird flew out of the thicket. It flew across the glade and sat on an upright branch not far from our heads. It didn't sit, however, but stood on the wavering branch. It blinked. And I thought how ugly bird eyes are. No brow, but with strongly pronounced eyelids. "What is that?" I asked in a whisper. "A thrush. Is that a thrush?" No one answers. I turned my back to them. My greedy gaze doesn't follow them. They delight in their solitude. I look at the bird. Glancing back, I see Boris Mikhailovich is stroking Natasha's cheek. His hand is thinking, "Let him look at the bird, the offended young man." I don't see the bird anymore. I am listening. I hear the sound of a kiss breaking. I don't turn around, but they are caught. They see that I flinched. "Is that a thrush?" I ask. The bird's not there anymore. It flew up through the crown of the trees. The flight is difficult. The bird flies, hitting the leaves. Natasha treated us to cherries. By a childish habit, I keep one seed in my mouth. It rolled around in my mouth and was sucked clean. I took it out. It looked wooden. I left the dacha with a cherry seed in my mouth. I travel through the invisible country. I return from the dacha to the city. The sun is setting. I'm heading east. I am travelling a double path. One path is accessible to the observation of everyone. A passerby sees a man walking along an empty, overgrown area. But what's going on with this peacefully walking man? He sees his shadow in front of himself. The shadow moves along the ground, extending into the distance. It has long, colourless legs. I traverse the vacant lot. The shadow rises along a brick wall and suddenly loses its head. The passerby doesn't see this, only I see it. I step into a corridor between two buildings. The corridor is endlessly high, filled with shade. Here the soil is clay-like, pliable, like in a garden. Toward me, along the wall, moving to the side, runs a stray dog. We pass. I look behind. The threshold behind is shining. There, on the threshold, a solar flare momentarily covers over the dog. Then it runs off into the emptiness, and only now I can see its colour. Reddish. All this happens in the invisible country, because in the country accessible to normal vision, something else is going on. A traveller meets a dog. The sun sets. The vacant lot turns green. The invisible land is a land of attention and imagination. The traveller is not alone. Two sisters walk at his sides and lead the traveller by the hand. One sister is called Attention, the other Imagination. So what does this mean? Does it mean that, in defiance of everyone, in defiance of order and society, I create a world which submits to no laws save the shadowy laws of my own feelings? What does this mean? There are two worlds, the old and the new. And what world is this? A third world? There are two paths, but what is the third path? Natasha sets a date with me and doesn't come. I come a half hour early. The tram clock hangs above the intersection. It looks like a small barrel, doesn't it? Two faces, two bottoms. Oh, empty barrel of time. Natasha is supposed to come at 3:30. I wait. Of course she won't come. It's 3:10. I stand at the tram stop. Everything is moving around me. I alone stick out. People who have lost their way see me from a distance. And it all begins. A strange woman comes up to me. Excuse me, says the strange woman. Can I get to Podzinski on the number 27? No one must know that I'm waiting for a date. Let them better think. That smiling young man came out onto the corner to facilitate the well-being of strangers. He will tell all. He will give directions. He will give us reassurance. To him! To him! Yes, I answer, wearing myself out with courtesy. You can't get to Kudrinsky on the number 27. And then right away I stumble and rush after the woman. No, no, you have to take the 16. Let's forget about the date. I'm not in love. I'm the good genii of the street. To me, to me. 3:15. The hands on the clock come together and reach to the horizontal. Seeing this, I think it's a fly drying its hands. The endless fly of time. Stupid. What's all this about a fly of time? She's not coming and won't come. A Red Army soldier approaches. Say, he asks, where's the Darwin Museum? I don't know. I think it's over there. Wait, wait. No, I don't know, comrade. I don't know. Let's go. Who's next? Don't be shy. A taxi, making a turn, rolls up to me. Look how the driver disdains me. Of course, not with his whole soul. He wouldn't condescend to despise me with his whole soul. He despises me only with his glove. Comrade driver, believe me, I'm an amateur. I don't know where you should take your car. I'm not standing here to give you directions. I've got my own business. I'm standing here because it's a pity I have to... It's not a friendly smile on my face, but a tense one, see? How do I get to Vasantresky? The driver asks across his shoulder. And I, flossing, explain. There, there, and then there. If it's come to this, why don't I stand in the middle of the street and seriously take up this business which has been forced on me? A blind man comes up. He shouts at me. He pokes me with his cane. Is the number 10 coming? He asks. Huh? The 10? No, I answer, almost stroking him. No, comrade, this is not the number 10, it's the 2. But here comes the 10. She's already 10 minutes late. Why wait? Or maybe she's somewhere, hurrying, running. Oh, I'm late. Oh, I'm late. The woman is already riding on the 16. The Red Army soldier is already strolling through the cool corridors of the museum. The taxi driver is already sounding his horn on Vasilevsky. The blind man, indignant and egotistical, is already stepping up onto the front of the bus, carrying his cane in front of himself. Everybody's satisfied. Everybody's happy. and I stand with a stupid grin on my face. And more people come up to question me. An old woman, a drunk, a group of children with a flag. And I'm already starting to chop the air with my hands. I no longer just nod with my chin like a chance passerby. No, I stretch out my hand, my palm perpendicular. In a minute, a baton will grow out of my hand. Back, I'll shout. Stop! To Varsinevsky, turn round. Old woman, to the right, stop! Oh, look! A whistle hangs between my lips. I whistle. I have the right to whistle. Children envy me. Back! Oh, look! I am already standing between the passing streetcars. Look, I stand with one leg extended forward and hands clasped behind my back, propping up my back with a crimson baton. Congratulate me, Natasha. I've turned into a traffic cop. Then I see. Abel is standing off at a distance, watching me. Abel is my neighbour. Natasha is not coming. That's clear. I call to Abel. Me. Did you see Abel? Abel. I saw. You're crazy. Me. Did you see Abel? I've turned into a traffic cop. Pause. Still one more glance at the clock. No chance. 10 to 4. Me. However, it's beyond you. My transformation into a traffic cop took place in the invisible country. Abel. Your invisible country is idealistic delirium. Me. And you know what's most amazing, Abel? It's amazing that in this enchanted land, I should figure as a traffic cop. I'd have thought I'd move about there peacefully and majestically like a sovereign with the flowering staff of a wise man in my hand. But look, in my hand is a policeman's baton. What a strange conjunction of the practical and imaginary worlds. Abel is silent. Me. And it's even more strange that the pretext transforming me into a policeman is unrequited love. Abel. I don't understand anything. It's some kind of Berg cynism. I decided to plant the seed in the ground. I picked a spot and planted it. Here, I thought, will grow a cherry tree planted by me in honour of my love for Natasha. Maybe some day in 5 years, in spring, I'll meet Natasha by the new tree. We'll stand on either side of it. Cherry trees aren't tall. Maybe standing on tiptoe, you can shake the blossom on top. The sun will be shining brightly. Spring will be somewhat barren. This will be those days of spring when sewer ditches beckon to children and this paper tree has already begun its bloom. I'll say, Natasha, clear and bright as the day. The wind is blowing, making the light of day burn more brightly. The wind is rocking my tree and it creaks with its lacquered limbs. Each of its blossoms rises and lies down again, rendering it now pink, now white. There is a kaleidoscope of spring, Natasha. 5 years ago, you treated me to some cherries, remember? Unrequited love makes the memory poorer and more clear. To this day, I remember, your palm was violet from the cherry juice, and you rolled it into a horn shape, sprinkling the cherries down to me. I carried off a seed in my mouth. I planted a tree in memory of the fact that you didn't love me. It is blossoming. You see, I was ridiculed then. Boris Mikhailovich was brave, conquering you. I was a dreamer, infantile. I was searching for a thrush while you were kissing. I was a romantic. But look, a strong, manly tree has grown from the seed of a romantic. You know, the Japanese believe that the cherry blossom is the soul of a man. Look, a short, strong Japanese tree is standing. Believe me, Natasha, romanticism is a manly thing, and you shouldn't laugh at it. It all depends on how you approach it. If Boris Mikhailovich caught me squatting on the vacant lot, planting the infantile seed, he would again have felt his victory over me, the victory of a man over a dreamer. And at that moment, I was hiding a nucleus in the ground. It broke and let out a blinding light. I was hiding a seed in the ground. This tree is my child from you, Natasha. Bring the sun which Boris Mikhailovich gave you. I'll see if he is as healthy, clean and absolute as this tree, born of an infantile subject. I returned home from the Dachka. Just then, Abel came out from behind the wall. He is a union worker. He is short and wearing a Tolstoy blouse, sandals and light blue socks. He's shaved, but his cheeks are black. Abel always seems to need another shave. You might even think that he has not two, but one cheek. Black. Abel has an aquiline nose and one black cheek. Abel, what's going on with you? I was on the train yesterday and saw you squatting, digging in the ground with your hands. What's going on? I am silent. He paces in the room. A man squatting and digging in the ground. What's he doing? No one knows. Is he conducting an experiment? Or is he having a fit? No one knows. Do you really have fits? Me, after a pause. You know what I've been thinking, Abel? I've been thinking that dreamers shouldn't have children. What does the new world need with the children of dreamers? Let dreamers create trees for the new world. Abel, it's not called for in the plan. The land of attention begins at the head of the bed. On the chair, you move toward your bed while getting undressed before going to sleep. You wake up early in the morning. The house is still sleeping. The room is filled with sunshine. Silence. Don't move so as not to disturb the stillness of the light. Socks are lying on the chair. They're brown. But in the stillness and brightness of the light, you suddenly notice in the brown fabric separate threads waving in the air. Crimson, blue, orange. Sunday morning, I'm again walking along the well-known path to Natasha's. I should write, Travels in the Invisible Land. If you please, here's a chapter for the travel, which ought to be titled, Man Hurrying to Throw a Stone. There were bushes growing by a brick wall. I passed the bushes while walking on the path. I saw a niche on the wall and wanted to throw a stone into it. I bent down. A stone was lying at my feet. Then I saw an anthill. The last time I saw an anthill was 20 years ago. Oh, of course I've had occasion to step on anthills in the past 20 years, many times, and of course I've seen them. But seeing them, I didn't think I'm stepping on anthills. No, the word anthill simply flashed into my mind, and that's all. The living image was promptly and obligingly shoved aside by the word, popping up at just the right moment. Oh, I recalled anthills are revealed suddenly with a glance. One, oh, and another. Then look, look, another one. And that's just what happened this time. One after another, three anthills appeared. From my height, I couldn't see the ants. My eyesight caught only a disturbance of forms which quite easily could have been seen as motionless. And my sight willingly gave in to the deception. I looked and was ready to agree that it wasn't a mass of ants scurrying around the anthill, but it was merely the anthill itself, crumbling like dunes. With the stone in my hand, I stood 4 paces away from the wall. The stone was to land in the niche. I swing back my arm. The stone flew and hit the bricks. A column of dust twisted up. I missed. The stone landed in some bushes at the foot of the wall. It was only then that I heard the cry of the stone, even though it had been uttered when it was still in my clenched hand. "Wait," shouted the stone, "look at me." And really, I was in too much of a hurry. I should have looked the stone over. Undoubtedly, it would have turned out to be a most amazing thing. And now it's gone, disappeared in the bushes and undergrowth. And I, who held the stone in my hand, don't even know what colour it was. Maybe the stone was lilac. Maybe it wasn't a monolith, but made up of different substances. Maybe there was a fossil inside it, the remnants of an insect, or a cherry seed. Maybe the stone was porous. And finally, maybe it wasn't a stone that I picked up from the ground, but a petrified bone. I met a group of tourists along the road. 20 people were walking along the vacant lot in which the cherry seed was resting. Abel was leading them. I stepped aside. Abel didn't see me, or to be more precise, he didn't understand me. He saw me, but didn't notice me. Like every fanatic, he gulped me down, not waiting to find out whether I agreed to it or not. Abel stepped away from his congregation, then turned to face them with his back to me, and exclaimed, waving his hand mightily, "Here! Here! Here!" A pause. Silence. "Comrades from Kursk," Abel shouts, "I hope you have imaginations. Imagine, don't be shy." Oh, Abel is trying to infiltrate into the land of imagination. Does he already want to show the tourists the cherry tree that is blooming in honour of unrequited love? Abel is searching for a way into the invisible country. He walks. He stops, kicking a leg. He kicks again. And again. He wants to free himself from some small curling plant that wound itself around his foot while he was walking. He stomped his foot. The plant crackled and little yellow balls rolled out of it. So many plants in this story. Trees, bushes. Right here will rise up the giants I told you about. Dear Natasha, I forgot about the main thing, the plan. There's the plan. I acted without asking permission of the plan. In 5 years, on this spot, where there is now a vacant lot, ditches, useless walls, a concrete giant will rise up. My sister, Imagination, is an impulsive person. In the spring, they'll start laying the foundation, and what will happen to my seed then? Yes, there in the invisible country, someday, the tree dedicated to you will bloom. Tourists will come to the concrete giant. They will not see your tree. It is really impossible to make the invisible country visible. This letter is imaginary. I didn't write it. I could have written it if Abel hadn't said what he said. The building will be laid out in a semicircle, said Abel. The exterior of the semicircle will be filled in with a garden. Do you have imagination? I have imagination, I said. I see it, Abel. I see it clearly. There will be a garden here. And on that spot where we are standing, will grow a cherry tree.